Are you looking to modernize your veterinary practice by offering virtual care to pet owners? Fortunately, there's an easy solution from the podcast sponsor, Medici. That's M-E-D-I-C-I. Medici is a telehealth solution built for veterinarians. I've made it easy to check out Medici with a link in the show notes, or you can head over to their website, medici.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. Medici lets you text, call, and video chat with clients with their easy-to-use app. Send or receive images and videos of pets, stay VCPR compliant, and get paid, which is always a wonderful thing, for delivering convenient care right from your phone.
Hi, this is Dr. Aaron Smiley, and I've offered telemedicine to my clients since I started. In 2017, I integrated paid telemedicine with Medici.
Ready to go virtual? Visit medici.md, that's M-E-D-I-C-I.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. And with that, here's the show. Welcome to the Veterinary Success Podcast. I'm your host, Isaiah Douglas. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Dan Markwalder, who is a veterinarian and partner in Companion Animal Hospital Partners and Animal Care Clinic, both in the Chicagoland area. And then he is also a principal and co-founder in the 7S Society, and also a co-founder of the Vet Mentor Solutions. Dr. Markwalder, I think you probably are never bored with all the different things you're involved with, but thank you so much for carving out the time to come on and talk with me.
It's my pleasure to be with you today.
One of the things that I think we both share a passion for and is kind of the springboard for the topics today is practice ownership. And you were so gracious enough with your time at the Vet Partners meeting in Vegas to record a quick, you know, the one question that I ask you, and you talked about ownership. So you've been an owner in over 18 hospitals. Why are you so passionate about encouraging younger veterinarians to look at ownership and really take a strong, hard look at that opportunity?
You bet. You know, Isaiah, when I graduated from veterinary school, almost, gosh, I guess it's been 3 decades now, the assumption, the expectation was that when you became a clinician, a practicing veterinarian, at some point in your professional career, you would have the opportunity to potentially be a partner or an owner in a practice. In some way, over the last 30 years, we've kind of lost that expectation and that opportunity. Something happened. And for me, and you know this, that ownership gives you a lot of benefits. There's that financial freedom, that opportunity to lead an organization, to develop your own culture, to play to your strengths. And so when I, over the last 5 or 7 years, when I started to go back into these college settings and engage with these veterinary students, I think the passion is still very much there. Do we have some challenges, maybe some barriers for entry into practice ownership or partnership? Absolutely. And I don't want to discount that. But I would suggest to you and your listeners that the opportunities, more than ever, are just incredible for these young veterinary professionals. If you look at, for instance, the Merck animal health study that was done, I want to say about a year, year and a half ago, and we look at some of the challenges that we have in our profession. So for instance, some of the mental well-being and the lack thereof, compassion fatigue. Obviously, we all know about some of the suicide rates and so forth. One of the things that stuck out to me was that for practice owners in veterinary medicine today, they have higher rates of mental well-being. So there's some incredible advantages to being a practice owner. And so I just want to simply be that rah-rah, that cheerleader to say, hey, this may not be for everybody, but that's certainly something to take a look at and align yourself with the right people who can help you potentially achieve practice ownership or partnership.
Yeah, and I remember hearing about the discussion between associates and the things you talked about with burnout, stress, all these different challenges, and how actually being an owner, it seemed to be less, which is really interesting and encouraging. I remember hearing that at the Economic Summit and the team there at AVMA. You started your first practice in Greenwood, Indiana, if I recall correctly, which is nearby to me. Can you share kind of your veterinary medicine story, how you got started, why, and how you got to where you're at? I mean, that to me is an incredible story.
Back in the late 70s, I'm going to show my age here now, but back in the late 1970s, I went from cutting grass and delivering these things called afternoon newspapers to working at my first veterinary hospital as a kennel attendant. And I have to tell you, I was hooked literally within that first week. I knew right then and there that I wanted to spend the rest of my professional career as a veterinarian. And I was very blessed because I worked for an individual. He's still in practice today, single practitioner, and he just opened up a world for me. And I was very fortunate, though I was not a great student. I was a hardworking student, and one of the happiest days of my life was getting into veterinary school. Academics don't come to me very naturally, but when I graduated veterinary school, one of my desires was to eventually become an owner, a partner in a practice. And as you mentioned, I went to work as an associate down in Greenwood, Indiana. It was a great year for me. But after that year, I recognized that I would probably not be offered a partnership. So from there, I did one of the scariest things I ever did. At 27 years of age, I decided to open up my own practice. So I did a startup, a de novo, if you will. And back then, the veterinary industry was not well recognized with financial lenders and the banking community. So back in the early 1990s, to secure a loan to do a startup, particularly in the veterinary industry, was a very, very difficult barrier to overcome. And here I was as a young veterinarian, I had very little assets. So I remember going to a number of banks, could not even secure a loan. And the scariest loan in my entire professional life, I had to go to my grandmother, who was in fact a child of the Depression. And I remember her pulling out CDs from under her bed. Isaiah, I remember this. And she loaned me $25,000. I think the rate was like 6%. And I always say, again, it's the scariest loan I ever had. So I started my first clinic. I probably shouldn't even tell your listeners, but $40,000, I did not know much even about clinical medicine, let alone leading an organization and so forth. But here I am almost 30 years later. I'm so privileged to be part of an incredible team of over 450 people. But it's been an incredible, incredible journey for me. It's everything that I've ever wanted to achieve. I've had the opportunity. It's hard work. It's challenging. We find ourselves in challenging time, but it's been an incredible, incredible blessing for me.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing all the different struggles that you went through to get to that point. And it's wild to think about that. And it is scary to go do your own thing. I can kind of feel for you in that standpoint where I quit my job and started my business at 28, which again, what does a 28-year-old know really at that point? And even at 30, I'm still learning a ton each and every day. And I know that. And I think you try to have to be humble, but you're also hungry to go out and do something because you do see a void for what you want to be to, you know, your ideal clients or patients or whatever that is. So I can understand that and feel that still to this very day, obviously being with where I'm at. But you've had 21 partners and had a partnership for over 25 years. That is so rare in any profession to have partnerships that work. I mean, there's a book sitting right next to me called The Partnership Charter, How to Start Out Right with Your New Business Partner or Fix the One You're In, because there's so much divorce when it comes to partnerships. What's your secret for creating good partnerships? How do you align interests? How do you make people work together, especially high achievers? Because I know that your team is full of people that are really ambitious and do great work. How do you keep them all working together?
Yeah, I get asked this quite a bit. What's been the secret sauce to your success? And virtually all but 2 years of my ownership journey, I have had a partner. And as you mentioned, I'm blessed with now 21 partners. I love partnerships, but I do believe it is hard work. It's not easy, particularly in veterinary medicine, because we all have very strong opinions. I always say if you get more than two veterinarians together, good luck on getting 100% agreement. But I do believe there are some foundational, really some values that you have to look at if you're going to have a successful partnership, because again, it's hard work. I would say first and foremost, if you're looking at partnering with somebody to be an owner in an organization, I think first you have to look at what are your core values? What are your personal values? What are those values you're going to bring into that organization? And do they align with that partner? Because if your core values are not similar, that's a misalignment and that is a recipe for disaster. So you've got to have alignment in the things that are near and dear to you. So when I talk about core values, what are the things that are the non-negotiables in your life? What's going to be the DNA, not only personally, but professionally in that organization that you're going to oversee with that partner? So for instance, one of my core values is integrity. Who are you when nobody's looking? What are those things that you guys can come together and say, these are things we're going to agree upon? Number two, I think you have to look at what is your strengths and what are your proverbial weaknesses? So for instance, Isaiah, one of my strengths is I'm a builder by definition. I get easily bored. My wife says that's the ADD in me. I get easily bored. I want to build something and then I want to move on. And so one of the things that I have done is I have purposely tried to align myself with partners that are strong at sustaining and growing an organization, that they value the importance of culture. They value the importance of developing their people, because that's an important part, because I'm not strong necessarily innately in that. So I think you need to look at what your strengths are, play to your strengths, and backfill your weakness with somebody who is strong. I think third is, what are your goals and expectations? This is a big one for me, because if you don't have alignment in your goals, it's not going to work. So for instance, as you well know, I love building hospitals. I'm going to partner with individuals that allow me to continue to expand our organization. And there's nothing wrong to say, hey, I want to be an owner of a 3-doctor practice and I have no goal to go beyond that. There's nothing wrong with that, but you got to make sure that your goals are in alignment with that individual. And I think fourth for me is conflict management. There's going to be times of disunity, and you have got to be able to say from the get-go, how are we going to handle conflict when it arises? Because ultimately, you got to have unity. And how are you going to develop an environment to allow for conflict management? So again, what are your core values? What are your strengths and weaknesses? What's your expectation and goals in conflict management? To me, that's foundational for a successful partnership. All the other stuff, the legal, the operating documents, that's just a reflection of really a strong relationship that's built on those foundations.
Yeah, I think that's really well laid out and explained. And I think having, like you talked about, self-awareness as far as what are those non-negotiables, what are you good at, and just being able to be honest and open and tell people, it takes strength to say, you know what, I'm a builder, but I'm going to get bored easy and I don't want to do the same thing all the time. I need to be constantly in a state of change and on to the next thing. For some people, they wouldn't feel comfortable telling someone that, especially if it's someone younger coming into an organization, being able to say, this is where I'm really strong and this is where I'm not as strong. I know everyone hates that interview question, like, what are your weaknesses? But try to articulate it in a way that is very honest and open, because you want the right fit. You don't want to go somewhere, build something and align yourself with others when it isn't going to work out long term. And if you have that kind of feeling in that pit in your stomach, like, oh, maybe this isn't right, just, I think, speak up. And if you have that conversation, which could be a hard conversation early, it'll likely save a lot of heartache down the road. So I think your approach obviously speaks for itself, that it's done very, very well.
Yeah, you really need to be able to develop those open lines of communication. You know, we talk about that so much, but it's so difficult to do, right? And so you've got to be able to partner with an individual. Even I've had my partners that have come alongside and say, you know what you're doing is going to be hurtful for the organization. You've got to have that transparency, that open lines of communication with partners, to be able to come alongside and say, hey, I disagree with you. Well, let's talk about that. I think that's fundamental to having a successful relationship and partnership, particularly in the hyper-competitive environment in the business world that we find ourselves in today.
Yeah, you shared with me, and again, talk about trying to be self-aware, that you maybe weren't a great leader until about 15 years ago. Can you share kind of the story that helped you realize you needed to change that aspect of what you were doing?
Yeah, it's quite a humbling story. And the reason I share that story is that many times what can happen is here's a guy who's a partner in 18 hospital and he has all these different things that he's doing, these different ventures. He's just really successful. What they don't recognize is I've had my share of failures. And I can remember, again, going back when I opened up my first hospital at 27, to be very honest with you, Isaiah, I didn't know what I didn't know. I can still remember when I had to do payroll for the first time. I didn't know how to do it. I had to call my mother, who was a bookkeeper, and say, hey, mom, how do you do payroll? So fast forward about 10 years later. So here I was in my mid to late 30s, and I had a single location practice. I was very successful based on my financials. I was growing by leaps and bounds. I had great profitability. You look at my financial instruments, I was killing it. Well, one day I had an associate of mine. Now, this was an individual who I had a tremendous amount of respect for. In fact, I was even looking at eventually having this individual come into our organization as a partner. Well, he came into my office one day and he brought that proverbial sealed white envelope, handed it to me. I opened it up and my worst fear, it was a resignation letter. Well, you know, whenever you get bad news and you kind of start doing that self-talk, and my first inclination, well, wow, his wife worked in the corporate world. They must be getting transferred and moving out of state. So I went to him and I said to this young associate, I said, well, where are you moving to? Are you going out of state? You must be getting transferred. And he's like, no, I'm going right down the road, 10 miles from here. And my jaw dropped. My heart sunk. And I said to him, but why? And he looked right at me and he said, you. And I just froze. And the reality, when I look back now, is I needed to hear that. Because even though I was, quote unquote, successful, I was not the kind of leader that my team needed. You see, I grew up and cut my teeth in a very different time. It was that command, control, hierarchical, top-down type of leadership. And particularly in veterinary medicine, if I had one knock about veterinary training today, we graduate some incredibly intelligent clinicians. If you look at the way that they're trained, you got to get all 21 of the 21 differential diagnosis of whatever that disease entity may be. If you get only 20, you fail. And that may make great training for veterinarians, but it's not always a great recipe for leadership development. So I literally had to deconstruct and reconstruct myself. And thankfully, I went on and I'm still very much on this journey of developing the kind of leadership skills that I need to develop and change with the times to have the kind of successful, thriving organization that I want. Things such as culture and employee engagement and those types of things. So one of the biggest recommendations for young veterinary professionals is, one, align yourself with a good mentor who can teach you some of the leadership skills. Constantly be reading and developing those types of not only business and financial acumen, but also the leadership skills as well.
Yeah. And you're very vocal on mentorship. And obviously with the co-founding of Vet Mentor Solutions, some of the work you're doing in 7S Society, can you talk a little bit about why and what makes a good mentor, and then what you're doing in both of those organizations to kind of help bring that into the veterinary medicine community that is lacking?
You bet. One of the great things about veterinary medicine is it really is an apprenticeship-based profession. It's built on mentorship. One of the things that I recognized over the last really 5 to 10 years is mentorship has radically changed. To be very honest with you, Isaiah, when I graduated, again, 3 decades ago, I can remember my first day, I was pretty much thrown into surgery and say, hey, if you need any help, let us know. Well, mentorship has radically changed over the last 3 decades or so. So to get to the heart of your question, for me, foundational to mentorship is it's first and foremost, it's a relationship. And what fuels a relationship? Time and trust. And I always say this, if you don't have the time to put into a mentoring relationship, then don't do it. I don't care how great your skill sets are, don't do it. And literally, trust takes time. So the fuel to a good mentoring relationship is time and trust. And then if you pack it further, I think other key components is that emotional support and that task support. If you look at that emotional support, what I'm talking about is there's going to be times in your career where you're going to fail. You're going to fail and you need that cheerleader. I can remember when I opened up my first hospital, 2 weeks after I opened, 12 hours. So a 12-hour day, Isaiah, I sold one bag of food. I can still remember. I keep the invoice in my office, $8.60. After 12 hours, I think my profit was about $2.50. And I can still remember this. I went home. I told my wife, I said, honey, we're going to fail. We're going to go bankrupt. We're not going to make it. And I'll never forget what she told me. She said, honey, I know you're a great veterinarian. Now go show the rest of the world. I needed that at that particular point in time. So it's that emotional support. And then the task support. And I think that's a little different today. Not so much, but the example that I use is the legendary coach, Tom Landry, coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And there was one particular season when they were losing game after game after game. And Coach Landry, he went back to the tapes and he went and took individual tapes of every single player, what they were doing well, what they were executing on. And he said, this is what excellence looks like. And so for me, mentorship is acting as a role model of showing this is what excellent looks like for you and moving them to their areas of strength. And also, I think the final aspect of mentorship for me that I've had to learn is it's very much a two-way street. Isaiah, when I mentor today, I'm as much a mentee as I am a mentor. Let me give you an example. One of the things that I've learned over the last 5 or 7 years is the power of social media. When a 50-some-year-old guy can learn how to do Instagram, I remember the first time I did an Instagram live event, it was like doing my first surgery. And, you know, it was good for me to understand what that feeling is like. And so I recognize that I have to learn as well. It's very much a two-way street. So I'm passionate about mentorship. I think every young veterinarian should be in a mentoring relationship. I always say you should be mentoring somebody or being mentored. I'm very passionate about that. And that's one of the reasons that we started the 7S Society and now the Vet Mentor Solution. Vet Mentor Solution is a wonderful platform because you know and I know the need is there. I mean, it's the hot topic of veterinary medicine today, right? Everybody's talking about it. And yet, what do we see? Study after study shows anywhere from 7 to 8 out of 10 new graduate veterinarians 1 year out say they're not receiving the mentorship that they want. So one of the platforms we developed is Vet Mentor Solution, which is just a web-based that can easily be on your phone that gives you these little snippets. It's not to replace that one-on-one mentorship that I believe is fundamentally important to the success of a young veterinary professional, but it's an adjunct. And so we're really excited about that. We launched it a couple of months ago. We're now in 40 veterinary colleges throughout the world. And that's one of the key pillars of the 7S Society that we started this last year. I'm passionate about mentorship. I'm passionate about ownership. And so that's why I talk about it and appreciate platforms like what you have to spread that message out.
Absolutely. And I would highly, highly recommend anyone thinking about either how to be a better mentor or have someone in their life that they are mentoring or looking for that to check out 7S Society and Vet Mentor Solutions. I think it's great stuff that you're developing, and you have a team behind you that's working on different areas there too that have tremendous amount of expertise. And I can think about the social media aspect of 7S Society. I know you have an awesome resource there that continues to help make all the information out there and accessible to people, which is fantastic.
It really is. It's been fun, my journey on 7S. I always say I'm the token boomer. I'm so fortunate. I have Danielle Lambert from Snout School, who I've learned so much about social media and the power of social media and how we engage so many people through social media. And Cody Creelman, who wherever I go in any veterinary college, and when I say, hey, I know Cody Creelman, he has made mixed animal practice and specifically bovine medicine so popular, and the things that he's able to do with social media. And then my young partner that I've known since the age of 15, Dr. Adam Conroy, who is just a phenomenal mentor. And it has been a fun, fun journey. We love it. We had the incredible opportunity to do some live events. Unfortunately, COVID has stopped our live events, but we're excited with some of the things that we're developing through the social media and other platforms and so forth.
Yeah. And I appreciate you explaining that and letting people know. We'll certainly link to everything that we talk about in the show notes so that people can go out and find that. Switching back a little bit to your ownership hat, again, having an ownership stake and have partners in 18 hospitals, you told me one time that you're not a metric-driven owner, which surprised me because you always hear about having specific metrics and make sure you're doing this and that, and this is what makes something successful. Why did you say that you're not a metric-driven owner?
Yeah, please don't get me wrong. I am not suggesting that I don't look at my financial instruments, my profit and loss, and compliance numbers and those types of things. I think they're very, very important. In fact, I lecture on this. I lecture on the importance of things like your profit and loss and how to do a cash flow analysis and those types of things. But I think what tends to happen today is either one of two situations. Either we have, for many practice owners, they never at all look at their financial instruments. They barely even know what their profitability is, and they don't look at their expenses. Or on the opposite extreme is we have owners who all they do is they look at their metrics and KPIs, and that's what drives their organizations. What I'm advocating for is really somewhere in between. So I liken it to this example. If a client came into your exam room with a sick pet, chances are you're going to do some diagnostic test. Maybe it's a CBC chemistry or whatever it may be, and you're going to look at those values. But before that, you have done a good history and a physical exam. In other words, the test did not replace you communicating and taking a thorough history or doing a good thorough physical exam. And that's the same position that I take with a practice. To have a thriving, successful practice, there are some key ingredients that you have to take care of. So for instance, as the leader of that organization, what's the culture of your practice? What's the vision of your practice? What's the mission of your practice? Are you developing your people, your team members, and then empowering them? Are you working on employee engagement? What I call things like stay interviews and those types of things. That to me, particularly in this hyper-competitive, tight labor market, to me, that is foundational to having a thriving, successful practice. Now, how do you measure that? You certainly can take a look at your financial instruments, and that gives you an idea. That follows what I believe is foundational to a practice, and that is making sure that the strength of a practice is the relationships that we have amongst our team members. I'm a strong believer in the Tom Peters philosophy, who wrote a phenomenal book that is an absolute must read for anybody that wants to be in leadership, In Search of Excellence. And Tom says it the best. Your clients, the clients that you serve, will never be any happier than your team members. And to me, that's very important. And that's why we spend a lot of time on things like culture development, developing our team. So to me, financial and metrics are incredibly important, but they don't replace these other things that we mentioned.
I love the way that you speak so much about culture. Is there anything that is top of mind of a good example of something that you've done that maybe is a little unique or different to help build culture within the organization?
So let me give you a perfect example. I just had one of our partners in one of our organization. You know, culture is one of these things. We talk about it, but what exactly is culture, right? You know it when you see it, but how do you get there? It's that journey that many times is very difficult. And yet, we can walk into an organization, we can walk into a hospital, and usually within 5 or 10 minutes, you can get a real pulse of the culture of that practice, right? So let me give you an example. One of my partners called me the other day. You know what the changes, as we're doing this podcast, we're right in the midst of COVID. And so many things are going on that, quite honestly, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, were not on our radar. It's unique time. So long story short, my partner, one of my business partners, called me the other day and said, Dan, we've got 4 of our team members that are going to miss prom this year. So I just want you to know, we're going to do this. We're going to shut down the clinic for an hour. And instead of doing our normal staff meeting, we're going to do a pseudo prom. And everyone's going to dress up, and we're going to go ahead and allow these 4 team members to experience a prom that they're going to miss. Now, that to me is culture. That you care enough about your team that you want to create an environment people want to be a part of. And what does that look like? It's so individual, but what does that look like? And I want to be around people where that stuff matters. So I use that as an example. And I'll be honest with you, Isaiah, it took me way too long to figure that out. But thankfully, I've learned along the way that it is culture. And you have to, as a strong leader, particularly nowadays, when we're all fighting for the best of the best talent, I think the most important thing that you can do is create an environment where culture is really a strong part of the workforce. And I use that as an example. We will do things like, I'm a firm believer of the use of social media. So we use things like Bonusly, which is a great app where people have these little points where they can actually, when they recognize somebody who's doing above and beyond the call of duty, or maybe something that is a reflection of one of our core values, then they'll put it on a social media post that everybody could see. I mean, those are little things that we do in our organization, but it matters. You will hear me say this a lot if you spend more than 5 minutes with me. People do not leave organizations. They leave bosses. They leave managers. They leave leaders. And so that's why so much of my time is spent on not being the genius in the room, but being the genius maker. I surround myself with people that are a lot smarter than me. That is a big role for me because I want my leaders, myself included, to be a good steward of the people that we are fortunate enough to be called to lead.
Wow, it's fantastic. The whole prom thing to me is so cool. Just hearing that story, I'm like, wow, that speaks volumes. It's so hard to quantify that in any way. And it goes back to that whole metric-driven thing that we were talking about. It's like, how do you quantify doing something that special that will mean something to that person for the rest of their life? They're always going to remember that. Always, 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 regardless of what they go and do in life. And that is really cool how you can affect someone that way in a positive manner. And yeah, hats off to the team for doing that and thinking about that. And I think for me, I see that and I know, ooh, that's really cool. And I love that. I don't know if I would have instantly thought, you know what, that's what we should do. I don't know if that's a strength of mine. I need someone else to think about that as I grow as a leader and a business owner and all these other things. Like I need someone else maybe to come alongside and say, hey, we need to do that. That's going to be really impactful and powerful. That's cool. I really love that. You talked a little bit about COVID. Any experiences that have taught you and your team, changes you've made, anything that you want to share or think about?
Sure. You know, I have been a practice owner, as I mentioned, almost 3 decades. You name it, I've been through it. The recessions of the 90s, 9/11, the Great Recession, and this COVID has certainly been a unique environment. What's been so humbling for me as the leader of an organization of over 450 people now is to see so many of our individuals who, let's face it, early on in this COVID crisis, we didn't know the whole impact and how it was going to affect us. And to see so many of our team players step into the gap and put the needs of our clients and our patients before their individual needs, that has been incredibly humbling. And I think for me, what's important is as a leader of an organization, there are going to be times in your professional career as an owner, as a partner, that is outside of your control. Things happen. COVID is a perfect example. And so it's important that you're developing a resilient organization. So for me, those are the two things that I've learned. Have we made some changes as an organization? Absolutely. It's funny. We, you know, 6 months ago, we were talking about the importance of telehealth and telemedicine and those types of things. Well, let's fast forward to today. And we probably have done more telehealth and telemedicine in the last 4 weeks than we did the prior year and a half. And so I think what we're going to see is out of this pandemic, some incredible time of innovation. One is going to be, again, the telehealth and telemedicine. How do we go about delivering the care that our clients and our patients need and the different portals that we're going to be using? Things like, again, the telehealth, things like home delivery platforms, the online pharmacy. So I'm encouraged that even during this unique, unprecedented time that we find ourselves in, we're going to see some incredible changes. Sometimes it's a little scary, but we're going to see some incredible changes come out of this event.
Absolutely. Completely agree. And a lot of those things that you touched on, I know have been topics of conversation that I've had and heard continually coming up in conversation. And we've had a great flow through our conversation. There's a question I want to kind of go back to. I didn't know where to fill it in. So it's going to be kind of an abrupt change a little bit, but you did talk about scary. So I'm going to use that as the transition word. And I think a lot of people look at debt as being scary. And we chatted on it earlier just with young veterinarians and leaders and ownership that you come out, you have student loan debt, you're scared that you're not going to get a loan, which again, we can talk about that because that's not true. Not like you had where you had to go to your grandma and go find that loan. There's plenty of people out there today that will work with you. What's your stance on how debt has played a role in your growth with your career and your businesses, but also debt as a veterinary professional? And I think there's certain people that look at debt as like this evil thing where it can be something that causes a lot of issues, but it can also help. At least that's my opinion. I just wanted to hear from you what you think about that.
If you look at my own personal journey, particularly today, I have more debt because as I've grown my organization, I've taken on debt. I'll use a perfect example. We are building a 30,000 square foot startup, brand new hospital in the hottest area of the city of Chicago, $8 million building. I have to take on debt in order to do that. Now, don't get me wrong, and I'm not advocating that everybody go out and do and take on an $8 million loan and do a startup like that. I'm not suggesting by all means, But there is good debt and there is bad debt. We know that today, many of our new graduate veterinarians have debt. What's the average debt? North of $150,000. If anything, that's falsely low because we know one out of five new graduate veterinarians graduate with no debt. It's not uncommon for me to hire a veterinarian who's got debt north of $200,000. I would submit that I can show that individual through partnership ownership that I can help to eliminate that debt at a faster pace. And so one of the things that I try to communicate to these young veterinary professionals is that there's good debt and there's bad debt. Good debt is that DVM. You paid for that DVM degree through loans. You are at a great, great point in your life. As you well know, financial lenders and banks look at veterinarians as a great bet. One, we pay our bills, right? We all pay our bills. And what's nice about taking on debt today is interest rates are at an all-time low. That's why I'm so optimistic about the future. So veterinarians are a great investment for bankers. They love to loan to veterinarians. Taking on debt, as long as it's good debt. So for instance, you're taking on debt to become a partner and an owner. So it helps you eliminate things like your student loan debt. We're at an environment where we have all-time low interest rates. I can still remember my first commercial loan was over 7%. And I remember when we refinanced, it was just over 6%. And I went to my wife and I said, honey, we'll never have interest rates lower than 6% again. Now, could you imagine telling somebody I got an interest rate loan for 6%? So money is cheap today. So that's why I'm so optimistic. And then if you look at the trends of what's happening in veterinary medicine, we have a lot of boomers who are practice owners that are going to be selling their practices over the next 2, 3, 5 years. So we are in a very low interest rate. We have a great opportunity of a lot of practices that are going to be for sale. So this is a great opportunity for young veterinary professionals to secure financing, take on debt, because debt today is relatively inexpensive, and move themselves into an ownership potential that will help them eliminate things like their student loan debt.
Absolutely. And yeah, obviously, so much of what you talked about around his ownership, I'm very passionate about. I've talked about it on this podcast many times. There's nothing wrong with being an associate. You can have a wonderful life and go in and work for someone else. But I think for those that don't give ownership a fair shake and actually look at what that opportunity could be because someone else has told them, are making a mistake. I think you need to have those conversations and explore what opportunities are out there and your thoughts and insights. You've seen it much more firsthand than I have. But yeah, I agree. I'm extremely excited about the opportunity for someone younger in the industry to see a lot of growth and potential.
Yeah, the best days, Isaiah, are ahead of us as far as veterinary medicine. I am so optimistic. One of the things that I will tell veterinary students whenever I have the opportunity or privilege to speak and present in front of them is I wish I was 10 or 15 years younger. I really do. I am so excited about the future, particularly with all the innovation, the opportunities that are going to exist for practices and so forth, practice acquisition, startups. I'm so encouraged because the ideas that are coming out of these young veterinary professionals of developing these niche practices and so forth, our best days are ahead of us.
Totally agree. And just, yeah, it's fantastic. As we wind down, the podcast is all around success. And I ask everyone kind of what their definition of success is from a personal and professional realm. Be curious to listen to your answer and hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I think for me, first and foremost, success is what's important to you. So for me, it's faith, it's family, and it's work. So foundationally, the success is what's important to you. I think number two, success is finding your passion and play to that, bend towards that. Bend towards your strengths. And I would say, finally, success is developing your legacy now. Help others out. Do what you can to pass that baton on to that next generation. To me, that's what success is all about.
I love it. I think that's a great definition. And not that I've heard any that are bad. I think, like you said, it's unique to everyone. I just enjoy hearing that answer. For those that have listened, really intrigued about some of the stuff that you're doing, whether it's 7S, Vet Mentor Solutions, just getting in contact at Brainstorm or Talk or whatever, where would be best to direct them? How do they connect with you? Where would you like to send them?
I would highly recommend one of two sites, markroyconsulting.com, if you'd like to reach out to me. And please check us out at 7S Society. We've got a lot of things coming down the path the months ahead. And by all means, check out our Vet Mentor Solutions as well.
Dr. Mark Walder, thank you so much for the time. I greatly appreciate it. And this was a wonderful discussion.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. The comments made on today's show should not be taken as investment, tax, or legal advice. All comments are for educational purposes only. You should talk to your professional team before implementing anything. Isaiah is the founder of ID Financial Planning and Wealth Management. Isaiah is a registered investment advisor in the state of Indiana. The biggest compliment you can give is to share this podcast with a friend. Reviews help the show get found, and Apple Podcasts is a platform that is predominantly how people listen to the show. If you have 3 minutes, love the show, head over to Apple Podcasts and give us an honest review and rating. That'll help more people find the show. For all of today's links and information, head over to theveterinarysuccesspodcast.com. There you can also subscribe via your favorite podcast platform so you won't miss another episode. Finally, if you'd like more information and insights and the ability to have your voice heard, please consider joining the private podcast Facebook group. You can search for the Veterinary Success Podcast on Facebook or head over to theveterinarysuccesspodcast.com. Scroll down to the About Your Host and click on the Facebook icon. Then I can approve you, let you into the group, and would love to hear from you there. Thanks for listening, and I'll be talking again to you soon.